Welcome to the NFL Stock Exchange Podcast. In this episode, it's all about a rookie report. We're taking a look at the film of a lot of the guys that were drafted from the past draft, the 2022 NFL draft, and seeing what they've been like so far in their rookie seasons. We're putting them into these categories or awards, if you want to look at it that way. Guys who are overplaying in their draft position, some long-term guys that we like, favorite rookies overall, and maybe some disappointing players in year one that we're looking forward to a bounce back year, hopefully in the years that follow. And also we're going to crown the best rookie overall. We're going to dig into all of that within the details and into the film. I'm Trevor Sikkema. With me as always is Connor Rogers. Let's ring the bell. Bell, the NFL Stock Exchange Podcast. I'm Trevor Sikkema. That is Connor Rogers joining you guys on a Rookie Report Thursday episode of the show, as we've been doing the last couple of months. Thursday is kind of a mixed bag. We kind of leave it to open topics, whatever we feel like talking about, whatever we think is hot in the news. We'll touch on it on a Thursday. So you guys have been asking our thoughts of a lot of rookies from this past 2022 NFL draft class, what we think about them, how they're doing, how they've hit the ground running, if you will. So today, Connor and I are bringing five guys each to the table that we want to talk about in mostly good, but there's a little bit of a, hey, we wish this guy was playing a little bit better way to structure things so we can talk about this rookie class. But Connor, how are we doing, my friend?
I'm good, man. This is a great show concept for us, really mixing the draft that feels like it was yesterday, and it's unreal. These guys almost have a full year under their belt, and it's a different way because eventually, Trevor, we will do our all rookie team when the season ends, but this is different. We have the best rookie because there's no way to do it without that. A guy that is overplaying his draft position, a disappointing year one, a long-term guy we like the big picture for, and then just a favorite. It could be a story. It could be something they're doing. It could be a player too, or something that they've done for their team. So it's a cool concept, and I think we have a lot of data as well to kind of back up some of the special things these guys are putting together year one.
Before we get into this, at the end of the podcast, last episode, we were talking about college courses that we took that were basically just like mail it in college courses. And can I read a couple of them that I saw?
I have one from Instagram too that I'll, so you go first. It's the responses have been unbelievable to this.
Who's yours from on Instagram? Because somebody DM'd me on Instagram too. I just want to make sure.
Lawrence?
No. Okay.
Okay.
I'll go first. This is from Connor, who listened to a ton of the podcast and we love him for listening. He's like, all right, dude, here's the thing. I took this class called, quote, Disasters, Hollywood versus Reality, where the entire class was watching movies about earthquakes and volcanoes and then talking about whether they were realistic. It was hella easy, but the professor missed about half the classes of the semester anyways and just gave everyone an A. And then he said, please let me know if anyone tells you something that's dumber than this.
That's up there.
How is it a college course?
I don't understand, number one, how that gets approved.
It's amazing. Truly amazing.
Number two, shout out to the professor for realizing how much of a fraudulent course it was and bailing. Like, this isn't real. Let's not make it something it's not. You're right. All through. Everybody shut up and just go with it. Awesome.
What's the one that you got?
All right, so Kit sent me one. He said he took a vampire studies class. Vampire studies. I didn't really dive into what the curriculum was like for Kit, but he said, took a vampire studies class, .. Now I'm a lawyer. Thanks, University of Victoria. I mean, can you imagine sitting in a lecture hall and the professor is legitimately breaking down the development of the evolution of vampires?
Okay, here's a question. Do you think the professor dressed up, one, and then two, do you think the professor dressed up every day, or was it just a syllabus week thing? Like, hey, welcome to like vampire class or whatever. You know, he's wearing like, you know, vampire outfit, whatever. He's got like the teeth and all that stuff. Do you think that they only did that for 1 week, or do you think that they dressed up the whole semester?
Dragged on the bit.
I'm thinking semester.
I think semester. And my bigger question for you, Trevor, was the class only at night?
It had to be.
You can't have vampire studies at 12 o'clock in the afternoon when the sun is out.
Yeah. In fact, if that class happened in the day, I'm not taking it.
I'm
not taking it off principle.
It's fraud. It's a fraud class.
Not taking it off principle. Owen on Twitter said, I needed 18 credits one semester and took ultimate frisbee and soccer twice a week, one for 45 minutes for one credit each at FSU. That's unbelievable.
Great choice. It's unbelievable that exists.
Phenomenal choice. Aaron said, I took plants and sciences, wrote one singular paper, got 100, and also took public speaking during COVID. So all the classes were online and I gave a presentation in my basement instead of the 50 people in person. That's actually brilliant.
Gaming the system. Literally gaming the system. I love that. You could log on the Zoom, really close it, and just look at your camera.
Right.
And you think you're just speaking in a room like you and I are doing right now. Nothing to it.
It's absolutely brilliant.
We will get to the rookies, but it's been one of my favorite random topics we ran into. That was supposed to be like a get you by elective you thought was easy, and it turned into hell, like literally living hell.
Well, I don't know if there was, I don't think there was one class that was like that, but so I graduated from the University of Florida, and I'll keep this quick. I graduated from UF, but I didn't start at UF. I transferred into UF. So I was going from one smaller school to the University of Florida. And in order to do so, there were these couple of electives that I needed in order to qualify to get right into the journalism school, the College of Journalism at UF. So I was like, I'll just take these summer classes because I could do that. They offer them at the local college where I was living. And I was like, I'll just work full time and then I'll do a little bit of work. Like, it won't be a big deal. I'll just do it at night. It'll take me like 30 minutes a night or whatever. I signed up for two full classes and it was absolute hell.
Yeah,
I had to drop both of them. I had to drop both of them and I had to end up calling my guidance counselor at UF. And I was like, we've got to figure something else
out. This isn't working.
Because I couldn't stop working full time. And she worked with me and we ended up figuring out. Obviously, I got into UF. But I just remember I was 3 days into this class contemplating my own existence. And I was like, this is not going to work. Like, I'm not going to get into UF. I'm not going to be able to go to journalism school. I'm not going to be able to become a broadcast major. Like, and it's all because of this summer class, which is supposed to be easy. And it was absolute hell. So that's probably the closest thing I have to that.
Yeah. What they don't tell you about the American college system, or I don't know other, you know, college systems, is that it's absolute hell. I was a waiter 1 year while being a full-time student, and I don't even know how I made it through, but it's, we're here now. So we made it somehow, brother. Now we get to do the rookie show because of all our great accomplishments in our studies.
And now because we were such incredible students, now we get to talk about our favorite rookies from the 2023 NFL season. So let's talk about the one at the very top, which I'm not going to say there's any suspense. I'm not going to try to drum it up out of nowhere. We're talking about the best rookie from this draft class. And there's only one answer, Connor. And you can say this with a smile on your face because he plays for the team that you know and love. But it's Sauce Gardner, and it can only be Sauce Gardner.
It can, and people will, you know, try to argue a little bit here and there, and I respect it, especially if it's the team you root for. But when you just – the film, the metrics, everything he's done this year, I think my point here, Trevor, that I came away with – and, you know, we do the What Matters Most every Sunday, so we have a pretty good grasp of what happens league-wide. But I'm definitely in a Jets shell as well doing pre- and post-game. And I've thought Sauce has been the best rookie this year, but I did stay away from, is he one of the best corners? And then when I went back and did all of this, I'm like, it's hard to dispute that he has been one of the best defensive backs in the entire league. And I'll get right into it here. Sauce, highest coverage grade out of every defender in the NFL with 100 or more snaps at a 90.2. That counts safeties, DBs, linebackers, everyone. The next closest corner is James Bradbury, nearly a full 6 points behind Sauce. Sauce is second in completion percentage allowed, 43.9% completion percentage when targeted, and second in forced incompletions. So making a play on the ball, just forcing an incompletion on your own. He's only allowed three total 15-plus yard receptions on the year. He has a 48.6 passer rating when targeted. That is third among all corners in the NFL, only behind James Bradbury, who's having a great year for the Eagles, and J.C. Horn, who is quietly developed into one of the best corners in the NFL. He also is allowing 0.57 yards allowed per coverage snap. That is fourth among all corners in the NFL.
He is
pretty jarring.
He is so good. I wanted to, well, we were talking in our you know, pre-show and when we were talking earlier today, we were kind of setting all these things up. I was like, I don't want to have repeat guys. Like, I want to be able to give the nods and have conversation about a lot of these rookies. So I wanted to make sure that we didn't have the same one for these categories. There's no other choice. You can't pick anybody else. There's rookies who are playing well. Like, I think the receivers are playing really well. I went back and I watched all of those first round wide receivers, yeah. And I like a lot of how they're playing. Garrett Wilson right now is also my favorite, which is amazing that the Jets got both of these guys. But, you know, like, I'm watching these guys, I'm like, man, they're having really great rookie years. They're really bursting on the scene. This is fantastic to see. Love that. Nobody's close to Sauce Gardner, especially when you take into context that I feel as though the only position that is more difficult to come in and start right away in the NFL is outside corner. The quarterback is the only position, I kind of butchered this, quarterback, it's in the passer, is the only position that is more difficult to come in and start right away than a corner who is an outside corner playing for a team. Because you got to think about it, even for teams that are very zone heavy, you still have to play man. If you're an outside corner, you're still going to have to go one-on-one against NFL wide receivers. Probably not rookies either. Probably guys that have been in the league multiple years, honing their craft. They're bigger, they're stronger, they're faster than what you've gone up against at whatever level you're at. For you to plop Sauce Gardner down in the NFL on the outside and for him to be playing not just good for a rookie, but as one of the best and most consistent shutdown corners in the NFL right away, that's unbelievable. I don't think it can be understated just how incredible of a rookie year he is having. If anybody else was even close to this, I was going to argue for them just to say, hey, I want to give a shout out to this guy who's playing really well. Nobody's close. And I think that just goes into more of an argument to how special this year is for Sauce, given all of the context to it, where he's coming from, the level of competition that he had at Cincinnati, coming to the NFL, playing right away from week one. It just the expectations of a number four overall pick, like there's just been, it's been incredible. I'm saying a lot of words just to say that it's incredible.
No, you're right. I mean, because all right, here's kind of where the conversation's gone a couple times. Sauce is the far and away betting favorite to win Defensive Rookie of the Year. It's completely out of this.
You shouldn't even be
point.
Able to bet on this award.
I agree.
They should have shut betting down in week nine.
But
because
a lot of people
they're
will
just
counter.
Gonna, it's free
yeah,
money.
You're right. A lot of people will counter with Tariq Woolen, but Sauce's advanced metrics and coverage, snap by snap, are unique is the most polished way I can say it. Where, I mean, the trajectory he's on, you can argue he's a top five corner in the NFL today. I think he's definitely top 10 corner in the NFL today. Mm-hmm. You can argue if you really need to that he's a top five-ish corner in the NFL. That puts him on a trajectory that he's what? I think 22 now. Yeah, Sauce is 22.
I don't know what his birthday is off the top of my head.
I mean, he could be... Yeah, he turned 22 the last week at camp. So he could be the best corner in the NFL and he could be under 25 years old doing it. It's pretty crazy.
Just silly. Just it silly. Is. He has to be the number one guy. I think everybody out there knew that he was going to be the number one guy, but... Let's move on because there's going to be a little bit of a difference here as we go through these categories moving forward. What about a player who you think is overplaying where they were drafted? So essentially, who you given a salute, a nod to as a gem from this past draft class? Tell us where they were drafted and who you got.
It's got to be Tariq Woolen, right? And he's the runner
up.
Gotta
be. Gotta be.
I would comfortably say Tariq Woolen. Okay. Being a fifth-round pick, pick 153 overall, starter for the Seahawks. He's got six picks already. All right, so here's the lowdown on Woolen. Six interceptions on the year. He's played 444 snaps in coverage as a fifth-round project guy, all-athlete, right? So he stepped in and been a high-end starter for Seattle. Seven forced incompletions, a 65.6 passer rating when targeted. I brought up Sauce allowing 0.57 yards allowed per coverage snap. Woolen's allowing 0.86 yards per coverage snap. Woolen's length, size, ball skills. I mean, when you pull up how the corners went in this draft, I'm not saying that Woolen should have been taken, you know, over Derek Stingley or anything like that. I think there's a lot of football left, but the corner order went Stingley, Sauce, Trent McDuffie, Kyer Elam, Roger McCreary, Kyler Gordon, Andrew Booth, Alante Taylor, Cam Taylor, Britt, Martin Emerson, Cordell Flott, Marcus Jones, Kobe Bryant, his own teammate. I don't even have the time to keep going. Tariq Woolen waited a long time. He was the 33rd defensive back taken in last year's draft.
Cool. Man. He was taken after punters and kickers. We had two punters and a kicker taken before Tariq Woolen.
That's all you need to know.
No, I mean, I obviously was pushing back just for fun when you say I think it's got to be Tariq Woolen. I agree. You know,
there's other arguments though.
No. And yeah. I'm gonna highlight somebody else. I'm gonna highlight somebody who's really overplaying the draft position. But when you take a lot of what I said about Sauce Gardner, where it's like this is the toughest position outside of quarterback to come in and play right away. Sauce went fourth overall, so like Sauce had the easily recognizable talent in this draft. Tariq Woolen went fifth round, and this guy is having an incredible season as well. Not to the level that Sauce Gardner is, but certainly when you see that one was drafted fourth overall, one was drafted in the fifth round, you could still give a ton of respect to Tariq Woolen. So I just, yeah, unbelievable year from him. Seattle's got a really good one in Tariq Woolen. And anytime you can hit on a premium position later in the draft, that just does so much.
It's crazy what it does for you.
Team building in the short term, and then hopefully in the long term as well, because hopefully this guy's going to be around for a long time. So really enjoyed the Woolen shout out there from you. Not that he hasn't been noticed by people this year, but it's just important to note where this guy was drafted and to remind people how incredible he is. I gotta say Dameon Pierce. Who are overplaying their draft position, guys who have started, I don't want to say since day one, because there was the first week of the season where he was getting out snapped by Rex Burkhead, and then Lovie Smith was like, yeah, we actually need to get Dameon Pierce the ball a lot more. Pierce picked in the fourth round this past year, 107th overall. He was RB7 in this draft. So far this year, he's got an 87.4 rushing grade, which is sixth in the NFL, not amongst rookies. These are all NFL numerical grade. This is like numerical rankings here for all NFL running backs. 60 forced missed tackles, which is third in the league. 658 yards after contact, which is sixth in the league. And then 21 explosive runs, which is 11th. You know, I think that we watched some of the highlights from Dameon Pierce in weeks, I'll say 2, 3, 4 of the season. And then we just went, man, this guy's awesome. And I think that people have kind of been coasting off of that early work and just been like, oh yeah, like Dameon Pierce, obviously he's just going to be good. I went back for this exercise. I went back and I watched the three most recent games he had. He's still running like every carry is his last. And it is so funny.
It's his identity.
That you can watch defenders the moment the light goes off in their head when they're making contact with him and they're like, all right, he's going to go down now. I've got him wrapped up. You know, this is the end of the run. And Pierce just keeps chugging and you can almost see it in their body. They go, wait. And then they have to give just like more effort or really clamp on the ankles to stop his feet from moving or whatever it is. But you got to bring your lunch pail. You got to bring your friends. Like, you got to bring everything that you can to possibly slow down Dameon Pierce. And it's just such a fun and inspiring, I'll say that too, an inspiring running style with what he is able to do for a Texans offense that is completely devoid of talent in basically every area other than left tackle, Brandon Cooks when he actually doesn't feel slighted by the team. Like, that's it. It's those three guys with Dameon Pierce in there. That is it. And for you in 2022 to truly be relying on the run game as much as the Texans are, and not just the run game, one guy. It's not like this is massive committee, right? You watch the Atlanta Falcons and you go, oh, okay. You know, they've got Cordarrelle Patterson. They've got Tyler Allgeier. They've got, who was that late drafted running back who they'd be giving the ball to as well? Huntley, is that his name? Huntley, the halfback there. Plus you got Marcus Mariota, right? There's like a 4-man running committee. Yep. You go to the Chicago Bears, you got Justin Fields, you got David Montgomery, you got
Herbert for a while before he got hurt.
You've got Khalil Herbert, right? That's a full committee. The Texans, it's one guy.
It is.
It is crazy. One guy, and he continues to deliver for them all the time.
It's like 1999 when you watch Damian Pierce.
Throwback workhorse. So I had to give him a shout out as a player who is overplaying their draft position for sure.
I mean, you nailed it. He's been awesome. He's been such a good find. You know, this show really liked Damian Pierce as a prospect. Obviously, you watched a ton of him at Florida. He had such a good Senior Bowl.
Not enough of him, one would say, at Florida.
Yeah, not enough, which was a big question of his process. And maybe that shows that sometimes the NFL trusts bad decisions by college coaches too much. This has now happened off the top of my head way too many times, but I think of Alvin Kamara not really playing as much as he should have in college. I think of Damian Pierce. Running back is one of those things where you can uncover gems in the NFL level of a guy not being used or not in the right system or not around a lot of talent. Pierce has been excellent, man.
I think there's another example of that later on your list, which we're going to get later.
I actually was like, let me not say it because we're going to get there.
What about some guys that have been a little disappointing early on, which is okay. We're not calling them busts or anything, but I think that it is fair, especially to look at the first round guys who were drafted early, looking at their current impact and saying, I was hoping for a little bit more here. Who fits that bill for you?
So I will be very honest. I did my homework here. I didn't just default to this, my choice. I really backed it up. I thought for a little bit, you know, Quay Walker had a really tough start to the year. As you and I talked about before the pod, he's been better lately.
Definitely. Yeah.
And his expectations were different than this player. Mm-hmm. Logan Hall, the first pick of the second round, not been a very impactful year, but the expectations have been different. I don't know how to answer this question without saying Trayvon Walker right now. And I know it's chalk, and I know people would like, and we will discuss other guys. But when I look at Walker, these are things he can't control, right? He went number one overall. You're set up to be chosen for this category. You went number one overall. If you're not really good right away, you're a disappointment. Sorry. That's how it goes. So Trayvon Walker, 333 pass rush snaps. And that's where I want to cue in on is the pass rush. He's done some good things even in coverage. I think he's been fine as a run defender. Fine, not game-changing. 333 pass rush snaps. That is the second most for the entire rookie class, only behind Aiden Hutchinson. His win percentage is 9.6. His win percentage not being above 10% is a massive red flag. He only has 2.5 sacks. He only has 4 quarterback hits. He's really not getting there at all.
No.
At all.
Did you say the win rate?
Yeah, 9.6.
Yeah.
No batted passes at the line of scrimmage. In rookie pass rush productivity of guys with 100-plus snaps, Trevor, he is behind Sam Williams, Arnold Ebukadi, Kayvon Thibodeau, Kingsley Enagbare, Aiden Hutchinson, George Karlaftis, and Drake Jackson. He has not come close to living up to a number one overall pick when everybody for 3 months screamed he is not the guy that should be taking number one overall.
Mm-hmm.
I still had Trayvon Walker in my top 25 players. I still think long-term he will be a good NFL player with a long career. I don't think he will ever be a special or elite or even above average pass rusher in this league. And I've seen nothing to show me that that will change.
Yeah, he was still a top 20 player for me as well. But I mean, he wasn't a number one overall pick kind of a guy. And I don't know. I wonder how many teams would have taken him number one overall. And I don't just say that as immediate, like I'm trying to dunk on Trent Baalke or whatever, because he does this with athletes all the time. I'm not trying to like dunk on the Jags or Jags fans or anything. That's not really a dig, but
no,
you kind of said it right there. Coming into the NFL, he wasn't known as a pass rusher. Like he was this uber athletic, truly uniquely gifted individual who was a project. He really was. And so I want to at least say that to expect him to go up a level in competition and all of a sudden get better at pass rushing, that really wasn't going to happen. So in that aspect, I do think that him struggling in year one isn't exactly something that we didn't all see coming, but it is disappointing. Like it is just disappointing. Jags fans are like, where is our number one overall pick? And is Trayvon Walker going to hit it big before year three or four or whenever it is at the back end of his rookie deal, the way that you would want him to feel secure about signing to a second year contract and for him to be a real big time impact player for you? He's a uniquely gifted player. There's no doubt about it, but it's not like he has his pass rush profile to him. And I think that that's what people are really struggling with right now, especially Jags fans, when you look at the pass rush win rate and it's under 10%. Just like this guy can't get home. Like, he just doesn't understand the art of pass rushing, and not something that gets fixed in a single offseason. Like, it's not like he got drafted by the Jags and all of a sudden he got NFL coaching and he was going to be totally fine this year. I would have liked for him to have shown more his rookie year. Of course, I think everyone would have. But I will say the next two seasons were always going to be the most important for Trayvon Walker. Would you agree?
I agree.
Okay.
I would, and it doesn't change that he's been the most disappointing guy.
That's, you go number one overall, it's really hard in this league to draft a guy number one overall and ask fans to be patient for literally anything. Like, I'm not even talking about like superstardom. Like, I'm talking about literally any production at all, because he doesn't have any this year. So it was always going to be a tough ask. Year two, year three, I think that's, you know, that's, those are the years that you want to look out for. But you are right to point him out. You're right to have him in this category. I think you're totally
right. I just don't even think it's fair to him, in a sense that I just don't understand why he was valued that way. But, you know, if I'm wrong in two or three years, I will gladly say I was wrong. But
it's
not trending that way.
You mentioned the guy who I'm a little disappointed by, and I will say that, but saying a little, it's not like I'm totally disappointed. You know, the ship has sailed, anything, but I am a little disappointed in this player and what they've been doing in year one. And it's George Karlaftis. And maybe it's because I had such high hopes for George Karlaftis, the Chiefs edge rusher. I felt like he was a top 20 player in this class. He ends up going number 30 overall to the Kansas City Chiefs. He was edge 5 when it was all said and done. Connor, what I really liked about Karlaftis is I felt like he had a high floor to his game. And a big reason why is because of the strength that he played with. I felt like he was strong as an ox. So I felt like, hey, even though this isn't the bendiest edge rusher in the NFL, as he is getting stronger, getting quicker, understanding how to pass rush with the plan a little bit more, he's still got those violent hands. He's still got that fantastic strength to him. And I felt like he'd be a really nice run defender right out of the gate as a 5 technique edge player for the Chiefs. And I felt as though we were going to start to see levels of pass rushing improve as the year went on. He hadn't even been a good run defender this year, you know, let alone the pass rush profile. People were talking about, oh, you know, he could be a guy who, you know, might even get somewhere near 8, 9, maybe double digit sacks this season. And I think he's got 2.5 so far this year, but even outside of the lack of pass rush productivity, which I figured might be a little bit of time for him, he's not even been a good run defender. 46.7 run defense grade. That's not great this year.
That's disappointing for him.
11.5% negatively graded run defense plays. That's one of the highest marks of regularly starting rookies along the defensive line. And I didn't think that was going to be the case with Karlaftis. He's got 32 pressures, so obviously he's been affecting the pocket. So again, I'm not trying to crush him too hard, but just the overall presence of George Karlaftis has not been as elevating as I thought, or at least impactful as I thought that it was going to be for the Kansas City Chiefs. So I got to put him on a disappointed list, maybe just because of how high of hopes I had for him going into his rookie season.
I think they would tell you the same thing, you know, behind closed doors. I don't think he's been, you know, what any team looking to take him in the first round would hope for. And somebody that, you know, this comes with a caveat. We can't say it enough. Plenty of time to improve.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean they're a bust. It's just disappointing relative to where they were taken to where they are at with their rookie season almost coming to an end. Mm-hmm. So I think you're on it. I mean, he's somebody to me that he's just kind of a guy out there, right? I think the run defense you highlighted is the most important part.
Thought he'd be more than just a guy his rookie year. Mm-hmm. I really did. I really thought that he was going to be able to drop onto the scene and play really well.
I mean, I've felt for a while the Chiefs should be the favorite to win the Super Bowl this year, and they are going to need him down the stretch in big games.
And he's going to play. He plays a lot.
He's out there.
So I mean, it just maybe his best ball is ahead of him still this season. We will see, but would love to see a little bit more from George Karlaftis as his rookie season comes to an end. What about I think this is an interesting category because it can go a lot of different ways. A long-term guy that you like. So it could be a player that's really flashing already who you think is going to be around for a while. Or it could be somebody who maybe they haven't broken out yet, but you watch them on film and you go, I like the little things that they're doing. I think they're going to get a lot better that year two, year three, year four, whatever. They're going to make a big impact and their name is going to be a lot bigger than it is now. Who's a long-term player that you like from this class?
So I promise I put bias aside because this was my number one overall player, but I have a reason of why I'm painting this picture. It's Ikem Ekwonu.
Okay.
Now, why I wanted him for the long term was when you look at Ikem, he's given up 3 sacks this year, right? And you go, okay, he's been okay in pass pro. He gave up 2 sacks to Myles Garrett in week one. His third sack he allowed was in week two against the stand-up blitzer against the Giants that he really didn't see. Which is on him. He was late. So Ikem has not given up a sack since week three of the NFL season.
Pretty good.
No sacks allowed since week four. He has pass blocking grades of 1 in the 90s, 3 times in the 80s. That is very high metrics for pass blocking. That's in PFF
great.
System.
It's really great.
3 more above 78. So technically 6 of the 9 weeks, he's been 78 plus.
It's great.
And then the two other are mid to high 60s, which is just baseline.
That's fine. Yeah.
My last note I wrote was when this offense actually has some form of consistency back there, they're not playing quarterback carousel and just they'll patch this whole thing together. His run blocking will take off when they play as a unit together. He will be a difference maker as a run blocker. So I look at Ikem and go, man, I love his outlook. I just think he has. When you evaluate Ikem, the big knock on him was in college before his last year, he was really struggling as a pass protector, especially a tackle. And then he really improved as a pass protector his last year, but not enough where you said, okay, he's going to be an elite pass protector right away in the NFL. It's still something he had to work on. And he really got punched in the mouth in September. And he's been great since. So that's just Ikem to me. He's just always improving. And I think he, you know, really has potential all-pro tackle if the Panthers ever get the rest of their you-know-what together.
Yeah, I'm glad that you highlighted how quarterback play also goes into this because these are good pass-blocking grades while you are playing quarterbacks that, let's face it, don't have the best pocket presence. It's Baker Mayfield. It's Sam Darnold. It's PJ Walker. Like, these aren't guys who are making things easy on you. You know, sometimes offensive linemen can have really nice grades because, you know, if you're playing in a, like, for example, if you're blocking for Tom Brady, he's getting the ball out of his hands so quickly.
It's so true.
Maybe you're not going to have a chance to have like, oh, look at that incredible pass blocking rep, but you're also not going to have any negative plays because nobody's going to beat you because the ball gets out so quickly. So that just goes into it with Ikem. That's some really good context that, yeah, he's given up the 3 sacks, but they were very early on in his career. He's been able to steady the waters, steady the ship, I guess, if you will. That's probably the better saying. And I love the call out. I won't say that it's biased from you. I won't say
it is a little there. I mean, I'm watching him closely.
But I would just say that this is a talented player who is playing up to that talent as he is maturing in his rookie year, which is just what you love to see. So I
will say I almost made it Charles Cross, but since I did Tariq Woolen already, I kind of wanted to spread the wealth a little bit here.
Yeah. And go with Ikem. Look, Panthers fans need something to be excited about. So you're giving a Ikem Ekwonu. I like it. Mine's Martin Emerson, the cornerback for the Cleveland Browns. He is the long-term guy that I like here. Third round pick, 68th overall. He was CB10 in this class. If you remember going into the draft class, because he's about 6'1", 200 pounds, almost 6'2", actually. 96th percentile, 97th percentile, and 97th percentile in wingspan, arm length, hand size. And he is in a great system for that. He plays on the outside opposite Denzel Ward. He's played 539 snaps this season, 468 have come as an out wide corner. They're actually pretty split evenly between left corner and right corner. So he showed a lot of versatility in how you can deploy him. He plays up in press man quite a bit. 79.0 as a coverage defender this season, which is fifth among rookie cornerbacks. He's got 11 forced incompletions, which is tied with Sauce Gardner for the most for all rookies. And you mentioned
the second only in the NFL
who has more is James Bradbury. And then it's these two who are tied there. I just love that mentality and style that he plays with. It feels perfect for that Cleveland Browns defense. And you don't often get corners of that kind of size, athleticism, and ability, especially with those ball skills, in the third round. You don't. You just don't get those kinds of players in the third round very often. I think that guys like Sauce Gardner are picked at the top where they are because they have that unique size, speed, strength, and mentality build. And it just seems like Martin Emerson has that as well. He's really been standing out. There have been a couple of weeks where, shoot, he's looked even better than Denzel Ward. And I think Denzel Ward's an incredibly talented corner, one of the most talented corners in the NFL. So you get those two guys on the outside, man. That's why I like this as a long-term outlook. It's because with that kind of a cornerback duo, that gives you so much flexibility about how you want to deploy your safeties, whether you want to put two back there, whether you want it to be a single high, whether you need help in the box, right? All kinds of stuff. And I think there's just so much that you could do, so much flexibility when you've got guys who have that kind of ability. So wanted to shout out Martin Emerson, who's having a fantastic season for the Browns.
Man, I love that one. I had to go back and look where I had him. I had a fourth round grade on him. They took him in the third. He's absolutely outplayed a fourth round grade. So he's been really good. He's been very impactful for them. I know the Browns season hasn't gone the way they had hoped, but you almost wonder where that secondary would be without him. I mean, he's overachieved.
If you shore up that run defense, which I don't know how it got so bad in Cleveland, like
the interior is brutal.
They cannot stop the run. But if you shore up that interior and you get better at run defense, you have a lot of things there. Of course, Myles Garrett on the outside is an unbelievable pass rusher. You got some speed at linebacker. And now you have these two guys on the outside who give you that man coverage ability. That's a damn near complete defense. That's something that you should be able to turn around pretty quickly. So Cleveland fans, I think you got a good defense coming, especially when you can put those two cornerbacks out there. Before we get to our last one, do want to shout out our friends over at BroThrow. Have you ever bet on sports with your friends? Well, BroThrow is the only sports betting platform that allows you to bet directly with friends in all 50 states. No fees, no juice, no middleman. BroThrow is not a sports book, and not paying juice saves you a ton of money over time. BroThrow is a social platform, all right? You can take control of who you bet with, know who's on the other side of every bet you create or accept. Easily create or accept a bet, easily track your profits and payments, and always see the value of your bet right in front of you. You don't have to direct deposit money into a BroThrow account either. You can bettors pay each other directly by connecting their Venmo, Cash App, PayPal, Skrill, Strike, whatever. Betting $11 to win 10 stinks. You don't like giving up that extra dollar to the book for no reason. With BroThrow, you bet 10, you win 10. It's as simple as that. Throw out your first bet by going to brothrow.com/stock and use the promo code STOCK. BroThrow is free to sign up for. Cut out the middleman. Start betting on BroThrow. That is brothrow.com/stock. All right. Who do we got as our last category here, our last rookie that we're shouting out? It's just the favorite rookie that we watch. Doesn't have to be the best guy. Doesn't have to
be
the best fit.
You can't say we're wrong on this. You can't, because it's totally up to us. There's no counter.
That wasn't really your favorite.
Yeah, it's like asking someone's favorite color. You cannot tell them they're an idiot. You could, actually.
What's the Monty Python quote where he's like, what is your favorite color? Blue. No, green.
Spot on. Literally spot on.
Your favorite rookie? Who
favorite
you got?
Rookie is Brian Robinson Jr. And
nice.
I mean, what a story, what a year. I know he's not eligible as comeback player of the year because you have to come back from an NFL season previously. As far as I know, there's actually no fun fact for you, Trevor, and for those listening. I think the qualifications for comeback player of the year are not known to the public. Did you know that? It's not.
Yeah, I think we went over this on an earlier podcast because we were trying to figure it out. No, we were trying to figure it out because I think we were doing our mid-year. We were doing like our mid-year awards, and I think we were going like, oh, who's comeback player of the year? And I think I was like, is it injury or like, can you just come back from anything? Like,
yeah, come back from being shot, Brian Robinson Jr. Unbelievable. Return to the field after being shot. Insane. I love the big hat. The big hat was just, I mean, he's just awesome. And he's forced 14 total missed tackles in his last three games. So he looks so good now. He's healthy. He's right. He's comfortable. He's a big part of an offense that this team has been scorching hot. And they're trying to make the playoffs with no ads, Taylor Heinicke premium subscription. The 98th overall pick. He's outplayed expectations. Brian Robinson's awesome.
No
man.
Ads to no ads.
Taylor Heinicke. No ads. You pay a little more, but he's played like no. You like that? I mean, shout out to Brian Robinson. He's been my favorite
premium
rookie.
Subscription. Taylor Heinicke.
When Taylor Heinicke throws for 275, that's the no ads version.
Okay. Yeah. Right.
I think
right.
He did that last week.
When he throws for 175, one touchdown and two
that's
interceptions.
That's the free, like.
But they still win the game. When they still win the game. You can still have a free subscription, you know, and like you get some value and entertainment out of it. But, you know, the premium stuff, that's when you start getting the real
big
uncut
yeah.
football wins.
Who are you going with?
I love the big hat shout out too. My favorite rookie that I have watched this year, Kader Kohou, the cornerback from the Miami Dolphins. All right. I don't know how many people outside of the Miami Dolphins fan base have been paying attention to what Kohou's been doing, probably because he wasn't high on your draft radar going into the 2022 NFL draft. He was undrafted out of Texas A&M Commerce. All right. Makes the final 53-man roster for the Miami Dolphins. They play him a little bit in week one and week two, and then they go, okay, we're playing this guy basically the rest of the year. Now he is their slot corner. He's played 289 snaps in the slot, 174 on the outside. So he does dabble a little bit on the outside when they've needed him to be flexible. But 76.8 overall coverage grade, that is fourth among rookie corners. We're talking about an undrafted free agent who has the fourth highest coverage grade with over 500 snaps played. He is such an instinctual and smart football player, man. I watch him operate from the slot, and when you're in the slot and you have to deal with so much space, the offense is always trying to manipulate you, whether it's a wide receiver doing a two-way go, or, you know, pick plays one way or the other, or just like slant flats, these different combinations where they're
tackling
trying
in the box. That's hell.
Sure, of course, right.
Yeah.
They're trying to put corners, slot corners, in conflict, because a lot of times these slot corners, in order to be athletic enough, agile enough to handle two-way goes from wide receivers, you normally have to be a smaller and, let's face it, most of the time, a weaker corner, just because you were a smaller-bodied player. They ask Kader Kohou to come up and tackle wide receivers, running backs, get in on blocks, defeat blocks, do the dirty work. He does all of that, and yet he also is a fantastic cover man deep down the field in man coverage or in zone coverage. I love his instincts in zone as well. He keeps his eyes exactly where they need to. He's got a great feel for where the ball is going to go. I think that he has been a screen destroyer at times so far this season. So whether it is that skill set of his short area explosiveness really showing out in coverage, or his fearlessness to stick his nose in wherever it needs to go to do what he needs to do for that defense, Kader Kohou deserves a shout out. I've enjoyed watching him more and more. He came on my radar like 4 or 5 weeks ago when somebody was talking to him, and I was talking about him. I was like, I don't even remember who that was. Now, I had to remind myself about him being in the draft class. Got to see him in some NFL action, going back and watching his tape. And it's been a lot of fun, man. So Miami Dolphins, you're having a fantastic season. In a lot of ways, nailing on Kader Kohou is one of those ways.
Number one, incredible work by you and find on you. Because I have not heard somebody mention Kader Kohou this NFL season.
Sorry, great.
I don't listen to Dolphins pods. I know Dolphins fans are probably well aware. And, you know, man, this dude's got a crazy background. He was born in the Ivory Coast.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to make it from the Ivory Coast all the way to Texas, all the way to the NFL, I mean, what a background. Trevor, I ranked 309 players in last year's draft. I did not have Kader Kohou as a part of my evaluation process. And I bet a lot of NFL teams, you know, that watch Miami doing their advanced scouting each week is like, man, our area guys missed that one. So a lot of people did.
It just means you got to rank 310 this year.
I was one short.
Yeah, the next guy was Kader Kohou on the list. And you were like, nah, I don't
need
it.
I missed it. I mean, what a wild career.
Mm-hmm.
He was first team all conference 2019, I'm seeing, but he was there for a while. I think he was a 5-year player, probably got hit, impacted by
the COVID season. Yeah.
Pretty badly.
Just a player who you give him an opportunity and he just takes it as far as he can go. And that's why it's that goes into him being a favorite rookie there. So there we go. Best rookie of the NFL season for both of us. It was Sauce Gardner, guy who was overplaying their draft position. I went with Damian Pierce. Connor went with Tariq Woolen. Disappointing year one, a little bit disappointing. Connor went with Trayvon Walker. I went with George Karlaftis. Long-term guys that we like, I went with Martin Emerson. Connor went with Ikem Ekwonu. And then the favorite rookie that we've watched, Connor shouted out, Brian Robinson Jr. is an incredible comeback story. I'll say it. Maybe the NFL won't recognize it, but I will. I'll be brave enough to do it.
We still then, don't know.
And then maybe he is. Hey, maybe he, who knows? And then I gave a shout out to Kader Kohu as well. You guys let us know if you've got a player that you really, that came to mind immediately when we named off one of these categories, or shoot, maybe we'd love to hear you name out all categories. Hit us up on Twitter at Tampa Bay Trey, at Connor J. Rogers. Let us know in the YouTube comment section as well. You guys have been, I've been reading so many different comments about, you know, either things that we're talking about within the podcast. Sometimes you guys start talking about things that we weren't even talking about in the podcast, whether it's football related, not football related. I absolutely love that. Let the YouTube comments be a sounding board. This is a community podcast. We don't have a Discord. Maybe we should get a Discord.
It could happen someday.
We're scheming.
Here's the problem. One, Trevor and I in general are not Discord users. We used it once when we went on somebody's show and we were like 2 80-year-old men trying to figure out an iPhone. Number two,
what is this?
Why can't you hear me?
Hello?
Why is my camera not on? You have a good old man voice. Wow, that's like full Simpsons.
Thank you.
Really? That's really, really good.
It's funny because if I shaved my beard, I'd look like I was 12. So maybe we need to do that one day. I need to just clean shave
and then just talk in this voice the whole podcast.
Total, mind-blowing circumstance.
It's like a Snapchat filter in real life. That's me.
I was also trying to figure out, like, when you start a Discord, do you need a moderator for the Discord, or you just throw it like a stick of dynamite and see what happens? I don't know. So maybe we'll get there one day. Because the conversations that the addicts have, whether it's on Twitter, whether it's in our replies, DMs, the YouTube comments I've noticed lately are absolutely popping off with different conversations.
Love it.
We need to find a way to melting pot that together and just have everybody,
I would love to combine the fam. I'd love to combine the fam. But, until we get a Discord running or until we find a better way to organize it, just keep hitting us up on the YouTube comments. It's been a great place to read you guys' opinions on all sorts of stuff, even when we're not doing SpeakPipe stuff. Which, by the way, we didn't do SpeakPipe voicemails. But if you have a burning take, something that you want to get to us, those don't expire. So speakpipe.com/NFLSE. It's a really easy thing where when you go to that URL, you'll get a prompt and you can record your voice. You don't even have to type it out. If you got some long-winded thing, we're like, all right, I got a theory. I want you guys to comment on it or hear it out or whatever. You can hit us up on SpeakPipe, speakpipe.com/NFLSE. If it's something that we really love, we'll get it in on the show. We try to do that as often as we can. But let us know. Some rookies that you've really had your eye on this year, whether it was just a favorite, a guy who's playing really well, a guy who's overplaying his draft position, somebody you wish was playing a little bit better, or somebody you like long-term. We would love to hear from you. Love to hear what your opinions are. This is the last podcast for us this week. But of course, you guys know the drill. We will be back with you on Monday morning to talk about everything that we're going to see in the NFL for week 14, right?
Insane. 14. Very strange bye week schedule for week 14.
Yeah, the Falcons have a bye week.
So the Saints, there's quite a few. Like there is quite a few buys for Saints how late it is in the year.
Saints went into their bye week one quarter early. I will say that from Monday night, they packed it in.
I was just gonna say, when your season's over, you have no playoff chance, and your bye week hits in week 14.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do you really like pump up the bye week plans?
No, you're kicking back. You're getting hammered.
I think you're going somewhere entire week and no diet. Your drinking's on if that's your thing.
You're going to a Brazilian steakhouse and you're putting that place out of business. The green card? Yeah, baby.
Yeah, green card on. All right. My goodness.
That's what we're doing if we're on a bye week with such stipulations. All right, people. You guys have a wonderful weekend. We will be back with you on Monday morning. I'm Trevor Sikkema. That is Connor Rogers. Thank you guys so much for listening to the NFL Stock Exchange Podcast. See you guys on Monday.